Unibet. Episode 75. Matt McIlvain, Head Coach, Red Bull Salzburg.
I would say, you know, for me, it's somewhere around 4 or 5 times a year that I get loud. And I always go home and I tell my wife, it's like, I snapped today. She's like, how'd you feel after? And, you know, usually if I feel good about it after, you know, it feels like it was the right time and the right message. And I have always, this year, I've always felt good about the corrections that we made.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock. It is a nice little tradition here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock because it's happening the second time in a row. We have the championship winning head coach of the Ice Hockey League on the program. He's the architect of the triple sweeping Red Bulls. He's, of course, the head coach of Red Bull Salzburg. He's Matt McIlvain and now on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Coach, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Coach, lead me through your inbox after game 4 of the finals. Is the term explosion correct? Or how many messages did you get? How many congratulatory texts were sent?
An explosion is the right way. You know, it's some moment in your life where you're just so grateful. And to be able to have so many people reach out. I mean, we're talking about players that I formerly coached, coaches I've coached with, coaches who coached me. Of course, friends and family, you know, that part without being said, but, you know, support from within the organization, it was remarkable to see how many people did take the time to reach out. And yeah, I mean, it's a humbling thing and you end up feeling real grateful for it.
Now, we know you as one of the very diplomatic coaches, always trying to talk about the collective, hardly ever singling someone out, but I'm trying to make you highlight a couple of things, a couple of individual efforts a little later on during our conversation. But if you had to single out that one text, the one congratulatory message that reached you kind of out of nowhere, kind of unexpected, from whom was that text sent?
Oh, man. You're putting my memory to the test of all these people, and then of course the other ones that come that, yeah, you don't want to leave someone out, that's for sure. But I'm literally going through my phone right now and going to go look at all the different people that have reached out. But you know, I think to be able to say this one was more impactful than the other, or this one was the most surprising. I think to me, ones that are the most surprising are people that you haven't spoken to in years, you know, where you're like, you're following our team, you know, like those are the ones that are the most surprising. I think the ones that are the most impactful are, you know, like the text messages from people like Don Jackson, you know, that, you know, you're not surprised that he writes you a message, but, you know, just the, how proud, you know, the expression is that, and the words that he chose to express that to me, you know, probably made me a bit emotional. And, you know, I think that, yeah, for all of them, we're grateful. That's for darn sure.
What makes you so well respected within the coaching ranks and obviously with players as well, as that emotional side that you have as well, that you showed after the final whistle of game 4. And I want to back this up a little bit because everybody knows that, and Salzburg, only the championship counts at the very end of the season. With this team, everyone expected you to win this. And we've seen it time and time again that huge favorites have stumbled along the way. So pressure's always there, especially in Salzburg. How did it feel after this pressure had kind of been lifted from your shoulders with that game 4 win?
I love the line, and I think that we live by it. That's like, pressure is a privilege. And You know, how special is it to be able to be with an organization where you have a chance to win every year? And, you know, there's probably some clubs in the league that don't feel that, you know, that don't feel like, hey, this is our year. We don't have a chance to win. And by the time playoffs start, there's, you know, half the league that's already out. And so you could say everybody at that point has a chance. And, you know, that there's a bit of pressure on everybody. But, you know, the only thing that I can say is that I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that and pressure. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about, like, we have to win, you know, like, I don't spend a lot of time, you know, with those types of thoughts for me. And it's really became, I don't know if cliche within our team, but it became a real part of our language. We just stay so focused in on, we call it process, but like, what do we need to do next? You know, and what's our next step? And I think that you're just so absorbed in the process of like trying to beat a great team and get the most out of your team that in the end, you know, it's definitely not a plan to show a lot of emotion, but I'm also not ashamed of doing it. But there's just so much work that goes into it. You know, there's so many conversations, there's so many hours of video, so much of an investment of time, effort, and energy into the team over the course of years. And to be able to feel fulfilled with the championship, you know, that's where the emotion comes from. You know, it's about the people that you do it with. It's about my coaching staff, who I'm just so incredibly grateful for. It's about these players and you know, watching them grow close together and accomplish their dream together. And I think that for me, that's the culmination of all of those things together that just comes out in a big spill of emotion. I've cried after every championship win. This is my fourth one. To be honest with you, I usually shed a tear or two after we don't win. There's just the ending of the season and the emotion that comes with ending. I think that for me, it's always been something that is an emotional time.
I want to take listeners and give them insights that they normally don't get, because I got some insights right before we started this conversation. It had to do with a board and 12 clips. I'll let you elaborate in a bit. Again, I want to back this up a little bit, because almost each and every hockey team of recent memory has got some kind of way of reaching the 16 wins needed for the Stanley Cup in the National Hockey League, or the 12 wins needed in most European leagues to illustrate how far along they're already on the road to the championship. Now, Klagenfurt last year had a 12-piece Coliseum and they built it piece by piece. And after the 12th win, which meant the championship, the Coliseum was built completely. How did your team approach this kind of illustration of your way to the championship?
I think to start the story, truthfully, I think we have to go back to last year. And through the COVID year, one of the big pieces of feedback that we got from our team was that the guys didn't feel like they got to know each other well enough. And in a season where you're trying to limit time at the rink, you're trying to limit exchanges with our group outside of the rink, you know, you're so focused in on trying to be able to find a way to keep your team healthy just to get through games, probably lost in there somewhere is an element of being able to team build and build these uncommon bonds that teams need to be successful. There's no question that some team building happens organically. Over the course of a season, you know, as a team experiences success and failures and practices and bus rides and meals, it's like that's going to happen with every team to some extent, very, very organically. But one thing we set out to do this year intentionally was to build uncommon bonds. And you know, I think that if you want the big moments to happen at the end, you need to make sure that the dressing room is in the right place. And the way we started this year was with a big family barbecue. We invited all the families, got everybody together. It was outside, still dealing with COVID, and you know, we tried to handle that in the safest manner possible. And then our next team building event that we did involved rock climbing, and we went to up into the mountain. And you know, I was more or less anticipating a high ropes course where you're, I don't know, you know, 10 meters max up, and you know, you're suspended, and it's a bit thrilling, but it's not, it's not going to invoke any fear. And we get up there and we start looking up at this mountain, and we're like, immediately my stomach's dropping, and I'm looking around at the guys. I'm like, are we okay with this? And, of course they did a wonderful job of, inching your way up. You know, where you start off real small, you're learning how to trust the rope. And then, you know, as you start climbing, you get a little bit, it gets a little bit harder. Then there's a zip line trust fall. And then, you know, you go up, and I think all of a sudden we were, and I don't want to exaggerate, so I'll just say 50 meters up in the air. And you're suspended, of course, by a couple of carabiners. And but that's what's keeping you safe, you know, is that moment. And I, you know, as a coach, sometimes you get this like feeling in your stomach that's like, oh man, I gotta capitalize on this opportunity. And we were all sitting around a campfire actually right after that. And we just finished our meal, and we were kind of wrapping up the day with our guides for the day. And I just said to myself, I said, I gotta capture this. And I just went up and I asked the guys, I said, how'd that feel? And, you know, scary, you know, intimidating. And how do we get through it? And, you know, trust, you know, I heard that a lot. You know, the learning of how the system works, and learning to trust that the cables were going to support us. And then I think it was Thomas Roffel that said it. He's like, I just got so lost in ring by ring, step by step, that I didn't think about how high I was. And I just got so focused in on going one ring at a time, one step at a time. And in that moment, it was so, it was such an impactful day for all of us. And we shaped the message to the guys that concept of ring by ring, step by step, can be our metaphor for our process this year, because like you said, there's an expectation to try to win. And, you know, it's easy to get carried away, getting focused in on results, but psychology and performance psychology will tell us that doesn't usually add up. And so for us, we just stayed, keep our focus really, really small. We ended up having a carabiner hanging from our pathway out the dressing room, just as a constant daily reminder of the guys that we keep our focus small. They'd hit it on the way out the door, on the way to the ice. Our post-game player of the game got a climbing helmet. And, you know, it was just kind of to symbolize our, maybe our fearless player, you know, the guy that was able to overcome something, or, you know, perform at a real high level for the day. And before playoffs, we did two things. One thing that we did was we built a puzzle. I say we, but it wasn't me. It was our team manager and our front office staff that built a puzzle with pictures of all of our players on it, and coaches and staff. And each piece of the puzzle was going to create a picture of all of us together with a big cup in the middle. And then the other thing that we had through the playoffs was we created a 12 ring board that kind of symbolized ring by ring, step by step. And the purpose of it, again, is we just want to keep our focus real small. And, you know, we know we've got a path of 12 wins to be able to reach our ultimate goal. But that concept of ring by ring, step by step, it really was a thematic for our team this year. And it started last year with a learning process of, you know, hey, you know, how can we get a little bit better and where can we find an edge? And then we were able to take that and parlay it into something that was really impactful for our team.
Who got to hang that final carabina, that final clip onto the board? Who attached the 12th one?
I think that Jan-Michael Järvinen had the final pick. So I think we were in the dressing room after the game. He was the player of the game, so to say, the game before. And if I'm not mistaken, Thomas Raffel got to put the final clip on. I think, you know, with his impact on game four, it'd be pretty difficult to choose anybody else.
And obviously one of the best looking championship game winning goals in recent memory. Fitting way to conclude a great year. Something that you've already mentioned, you started your story by mentioning the feedback that you got from the players last year. Now you just finished a set of exit interviews with Red Bull players of the season 21-22. I'd love to take listeners and me through the anatomy of an exit interview. How are those conducted? Is it the same structure for each and every player? Or do you try to have them individually put together for players?
Good question. Exit interviews are, they're definitely unique for each player. So that's the short answer of it. The way that we shape our day, just to give you an overview, for us, we go 15-minute meetings in all my, I think this is my 10th year coaching or 11th year coaching. I don't think I've ever been on time with these. So maybe next year we need to go 20 if we can learn a little bit more. But it's just that there's always so much to talk about. And guys want to speak, and you want to be respectful of the work that they've put in, and then of course the feedback that you can grab from these is incredibly impactful. So the way that we structure it is, the player comes in. For me, we sat there with myself and Helmut Schlogel, our managing director, and the way that we typically format it is I'll start off by giving a little bit of feedback from myself, from the guys on the season. And then what I like to do is I like from after my feedback to pose some questions. Some years and with some individuals, it's individual questions. You know, if I think that's the primary focus. Sometimes it's an individual question, then it comes back with a team question, and then we might dig into that a little bit deeper and a little bit more to try to find, as coaches, we're always looking to try to get better. And if you're not, you're doing something wrong. So like even in a year like this where we win, still trying to figure out a question that we came up a lot is, why did we win? You know, what was the different feeling? What changed? Where did it come from? And, you know, you're trying to grab these nuggets of information that you can reapply. And also, like, how can we get a little better? What did we miss? Like, where's our edge going to be for next year? And then for individuals, try to get a little bit of feedback in on their season. Some guys had career seasons. Some guys didn't perform as well. And, you know, none of that will come as a shock because the dialogue has been with the players the whole season long. But to then reflect on the way that we typically leave meetings is the next steps. So for some guys, it's, thank you very much for your time here. We're very grateful. And you're now moving on to a different team. For other guys, they have done enough to become a candidate, to be considered with respect to the market of players that's going to be available for us. And for other players, they're under contract or about to get re-signed, then we typically start talking about their summer and what we'd like for that to look like. For a lot of our young players, it's about specific ideas about where we'd like to see them focus their energies and efforts this summer. We've got an off-ice staff that does a tremendous job. But also we've got one of our assistant coaches is around here the whole summer. So where are we going to focus their energy and attention? You know, you can't get 10 things done in the summer. Our summers aren't long enough, but you can maybe get one or two big things, and we do want them to be in better shape. We want everybody to be stronger, but it's like we want it to be more than just a bigger, stronger, better shaped version of the same player. We want to improve one or two small things. And maybe that has something to do with the sports psychology element, and we'll recommend some books and chats with our sports psychologist. Maybe it's let's improve your range on your shot so we can get more things off. Let's get a skating program together for you. Let's get a shooting program together for you. You know, how can we best support? And there'll be some dialogue in that too. So we can get the players to get early buy-in with what kind of changes we'd like to see them make. And then from there, usually Helmet has a piece or two to share, about his view from the season. And I think that, the meeting ends and on to the next guy. And it's a long day, but it's a wonderful day. It's a great day for collecting information. And it's a great day to be able to wrap up, all of the work, energy, effort, emotion that we talked about before. It's a nice way to cap it off.
Now, you mentioned that last year, the overall feedback or one of the bigger feedback points was that the bonds in between the team, the players, weren't probably as tight as they should have been. And I know this is really fresh, but if you had to distill maybe the one overarching topic that came out of this year's exit interviews, what would that be?
It's pretty easy, actually. So halfway through the meetings, when I'm asking questions of the similar flavor to each guy, I keep getting the same answers. And I had to say, you can't say this. Because it was the same thing that came up over and over and over again. I wanted to dive deeper into our team. But when we set out, like we talked about last year with the team building, we started with the family dinner, and then it went into the rock climbing. And we did another event where we were building a boat. Two teams raced. They built boats together and raced out. It was really, really cool. Then we turned our practices into a year-long competition. That ended up being some element of team building. We did little things like we started our days in the dressing room playing small games before I'd even have a meeting, and to D against forwards that we did this intentionally. We did it on purpose, and also we have great people. We have really great character guys in this dressing room, and the common theme, why did we win? It's the thing that came up the most is the brotherhood, and that's language that we use that basically defines our uncommon bonds. It defines the way that we the way that we came together. It defines the way that we act to some extent. It defines the way that we work to some extent, but the concept of our brotherhood, and that's what the guys left with, is how close this group is. And I don't think you're going to find too many championship teams where you don't hear guys say, this is the closest knit team I've ever been on. So that comes up. But for us, that was on purpose. It happened. It didn't happen by accident. But also, we had really good people in here, and that was part of our recruiting process, was trying to put those right people in place. And then the other thing that came up the most is, just the way that we played together, and how connected we were, how difficult we were to play against as a unit. And I think that those two things were the most common elements, in our feedback of, when you do finish a season like this, you want to try to find out why so you can repeat it. And that came up the most for sure.
Now, each and every answer of you begs 3 to 4 follow-up questions. If I really follow up on all of them, we're going to go way beyond the 1 hour mark. I want to keep it within the hour mark, knowing that you've got still a ton of stuff to do, but it's highly interesting. Also because of the fact that you already alluded a little bit to performance psychology and you using stuff from that. How much does or do things like that shape your coaching?
Immensely. I'm always, so I can't answer this question without going back to Don Jackson. So let me just go back a bit. So Don is the most successful coach in Europe. let's just say it. He's the winningest coach in the world right now. And I don't think we're going to find someone else that's had more success than him in the last 12 years. There's nobody else. And for me, I got a front row seat to that for 6 years. And people always ask me what makes him so successful. And for me, it's three things. It is oversimplified, but if you're trying to summarize it, I think you have to oversimplify it. And one of them for me is that he is a very humble man. So it doesn't matter how much success he's had. It's never about him, ever. And he's never satisfied. And he's never gets too big ever. It's not even in his being. The other thing that comes to my mind is, the system play, where, it's a lot of pressure, and, you put oppositions under, a lot of pressure, forced decision errors. And then the last thing is he's always thinking about the guys. Okay. He's always thinking about the dressing room and the people in the dressing room. And that is a very oversimplified version of what I grabbed from him. But let's go back now and link that to the sports psychology. So I believe that the difference between a player's top game, their top form, and their worst game doesn't have a ton to do with their physical skills. Okay. Because let's just use a name, Thomas Raffel. Okay. It's not like his best game and his worst game that he forgot how to stick handle or shoot or skate, or, maybe he didn't have the energy. That could be a factor, because that does happen, and that is physical. But then for me, I challenge that, where that lends itself towards a psychological element, which is, how do you choose to respond to the fact that you think you feel tired? And so, like, for us and our staff, and go back to that big thing with Don, it's like, you're always thinking about the players. We think that the gap between our best games and our not so good games has a lot to do with what's going on between our ears. And our players, we feel, know our system. We feel that they know how to execute it. We've seen them do it a lot. And to be able to keep focus of guys and keep the attention in the right areas and the areas that are impactful, that can make a difference, that's been one of our challenges. And we started off this year, like we've done every year. There's a book called Mindset by Carol Dweck that really struck home for me, because I could really relate to it from when I was a player. It's basically, has a bit to do with the way that you view skills and understanding that all of skills and every element of our life, it's really basically boiled down to, we're always trying to keep learning, and we're always trying to keep getting better, and we're always trying to keep working at that. And that's the oversimplification of that message. But, when you're in that environment and you're in a learning environment, I think it sets up well for growth. And that's what we're constantly trying to achieve is growth within our team. And then what we did this year, which was awesome, is our managers, Christian and Helmut, have afforded us the opportunity to bring in a sports psychologist from the academy that came in and met with our team. It was maybe on every 2 to 3 weeks, come in and just provide us, a platform, to be able to go back to and work through, and met a lot with individuals. Again, what are we looking for here? We're looking for how can we stay at that optimal level of performance as often as possible? And when we get off track, how do we get back on track? And then, I like to read, I specifically like to read about sports psychology, and I use some of the lessons that I'd learned to shape my messaging with the team. And that's all the messaging is trying to do is to be able to keep our focus and our attention on the most important things. And I think that's an oversimplified version of what we tried to do. But we coach the mind this year, between having Simone with us and our language with our coaching staff. We coach the mind more for me than I ever have. It felt real good doing it. We got a lot of good feedback from the guys. And I think in the end it makes a difference. And you talked a little bit before about being a favorite, going into the finals or going into the playoffs. And I have to say that, I never really spent any time thinking about, are we the favorite or are we not the favorite? It's not something that, is going to do us a lot of benefit to think about. But excuse me, the one thing that I can say is I felt like we had the group that could do it. You know, when you go around the league and you play everybody four times and you go and you imagine a 7-game series, I felt like we had the group to do it. No way did I expect that we were going to win 12 in a row. Okay. And they were all close games. None of the games got blown open early, they were all tight. And what I credit the guys for with 12-0 is for sure the way that we moved together on the ice, that was a factor, but it was a lot about their minds and where they put their attention and how focused they were able to stay through bad calls, through adversity, through getting down, through being down 2 goals with 40 seconds left in a game. So many of these moments came up and where we put our attention mattered. And, I credit the guys so much for their strength and growth in that area. You look back on it coaching wise and you feel good about, the efforts that we put in as a staff and, Simone's help as well, and the difference that it makes by the end.
That was indeed a long answer, but an enlightening one. And you started off by reverting to things you learned from Don Jackson. He's closing in, and they're in the semis right now at the point of this recording. He's closing in on an unimaginable 10th title if it works out this year in Germany, a 10th championship in about 16 years, which is incredible. He's an important person. He kind of shaped some of your philosophy, obviously, which is why I thought it might be a good idea to try and get a statement from Don Jackson as regards you winning the championship. This is what he said when being confronted with Matt McIlvaine has just become a championship winning head coach in the Ice Hockey League.
Big congratulations to Matt, his coaching staff, and his team for great championships in Salzburg. I can say that I probably haven't seen a complete sweep in a championship series before. So I'm really proud of him for that. I think Matt has, in his coaching career, has made huge steps. He's got a lot of self-confidence. He directs things in a great way. He's a great presenter and a great teacher. And he's organized and, really, he knows what he wants. So, with all those things, I think that it was a big assets for him, and he utilizes them to the fullest extent. So, along with that, comes to the players themselves. I know they did a lot of work, bringing this team together this year, and make sure they had the right people, and that proved to be so. So again, I want to congratulate Matt and the whole program there in Salzburg, Red Bull Salzburg, on a super season. Thank you very much.
I've always been of the opinion that it takes a great coach to know a great coach, and those were some big words that he used. He labeled you as a great teacher. Is that one of the biggest compliments a head coach can get from a fellow head coach?
I think we all have different styles, there's some coaches that, maybe are a little bit more gruff, getting labeled old school, screamers, things like that. You look at Sean McVay and what they did in LA this year. They have a rule on their coaching staff. This is a championship organization in the NFL. They have a rule on their coaching staff that they're not allowed to yell at the players. that's a rule. Now, I can't say that I went through a season without yelling. Okay, that's not a fact. But I do prefer the teaching style, and I do think that there should be accountability, and we call it respect to the game, and respect to our opposition. It's one of our core values here with our team. But I think that being a teacher is a bit of who I am. And I love video. I love watching hockey. I love taking the themes that we see with our team and being able to put it back. I love celebrating the good stuff that we do. It's my favorite way to coach, teaching from the positives, being able to reinforce from the great things that we've done. But I also love go back to the growth mindset. I love the journey of trying to keep getting better. I love that edge. And, you know, from that comes, you know, at the root of that is teaching, you know, and being able to present, like Don said, and to try to keep the group moving forward. But, you know, one thing that I just want to be very, very clear about is that what he said at the end, you know, he went right back to the players. And for me, the reason that we won, it's not about me. Okay. It's not about teaching. It's not about that at all. It's about the guys, and it's about them and their work. And, you know, I didn't score any goals this year. Okay. I didn't block any shots. I didn't do any of that stuff. I didn't make any saves, you know, on the ice. I didn't defend. You know, it's about getting the right guys and getting the group to move together, becoming a real unit, as far as like this brotherhood, the uncommon bonds. But then, you know, it's about teaching and teaching the group how to move together. But then it's them that get it done and execute it, and they should get, you know, the credit definitely, you know, way before a coach. And you know, Don's words are very, very kind, and you know, I can echo all the same words right back to him. He means so much to me, you know, giving me an opportunity and teaching me so much about the game and the way that we believe it should be played. And we're right in the same. It's not too often you find two coaches that are cut from the same cloth like this, but our belief in the way that the sport should be played is identical. And we maybe have a little different styles in our coaching, but at the root of everything, our core principles are identical.
Now that you mentioned Sean McVay and his golden rule of practice, not to yell at players, and we've had screamers, quote unquote, in this league before, and are probably still gonna get them. When looking at you during a game, when hearing from you after or before the game, obviously we don't have access to practice, but I'm always amazed by the kind of composure that you're keeping. Doesn't matter if you won by five or if you lost by five. Was there ever a point this year where you lost your composure, and what was that point, if you care to elaborate?
So composure is one of our big words as our team. You know, that's something that, go back to the sports psychology question, that was a word that we hit home with our team through the playoffs. That was something that was going to be a key part for us, you know, being able to maintain that. So for me, losing your composure, you know, is when you're a little bit out of control. And I can say that for me, when I get upset at the team, it's with purpose behind it. And it's not out of control. It's targeted. And there were definitely times this year where I had to get emotional with our team. We have some core values. So like I mentioned, one of them is about respect and humility. And our last one is about being connected. And when I feel like we're being disrespectful to our opponent, and when I feel like we're being disrespectful to the game, when I feel like we have any element of complacency that slips into our team or our habits or the way that we're playing, it needs to get corrected immediately. And there was a game at home this year. We were playing Feloc. We were up 3 or 4 to 1 early. It was a big lead, maybe 3-0. And in the second period, we started to get a little bit complacent, I felt. And we started to be irresponsible with our puck play. And I thought that it needed to be corrected quickly. And so, you know, you get emotional on the bench. And it was actually during a TV timeout. I've never done that before. But we got back on track. We put our focus into the right area. And every once in a while, I think that the team can get corrected in that way. I think if that's your number one tool, I think guys will tune you out eventually. But I think if it comes out at the right times, and I think the thing that the guys told me the most is that it feels genuine. You know, that's something else that needs to come out in it, and so that they can take the message and the tone to be able to make the correct changes. I would say, you know, for me, it's somewhere around 4 or 5 times a year that I get loud, and I always go home and I tell my wife, it's like I snapped today. She's like, how'd you feel after? And you know, usually if I feel good about it after, you know, it feels like it was the right time and the right message. And I have always this year, I've always felt good about the corrections that we made, and the guys responded. That's their credit, you know, that when we needed a change of behavior. And sometimes it has to come. Most of the time, I prefer to light the fire within people instead of light the fire underneath people. But sometimes the stick has to come out. And when it did, they responded so well. And I think that was a sign too of how close we were as a group.
Now, as you're talking about the players and about the group that was brought in, about everything that you did leading up to the season, a great regular season. It's also something that the great statisticians over at Unibet have assessed. A regular season with the fewest goals against, with the fewest penalty minutes, the best away team, the longest win streak, the longest series of consecutive games with a 0.1 of 18 games. At what point did you think, wow, this is a cohesive unit that could go all the way? Was that obvious from the get-go, or was it a process?
No, it was a process. I don't know that. I think we had to get through all the teams 4 times to have that feeling, or at least 3 times to have that feeling. And we didn't get to play Vienna until really the very end of the season, because we had canceled games. We actually played them back to back, and I had COVID for those games. And so we didn't feel like we played well when we played them. And so we were still trying to get to know the whole league and our opponents and where we stacked up. So that was definitely a process. I think the all the statistics that you just named, you know, we had great goaltending. That's a factor. Had three really good goalies. We had a really disciplined team, you know, like they were so willing to play without the puck, and, you know, abide to, you know, the rules that we have about how we play when we don't have the puck. We were really disciplined with that as a group. I think in this, you have to mention our depth, you know, from the perspective of our academy. We went through a phase, and could it be the wrong month now, but I think it was October and November. We had as many as 9 to 11 guys out of our lineup, and we're talking about top players, you know, for our team, that were replaced by, you know, 19 and 20 year olds, 18 year olds that came in and were just able to play our system so effectively that we were able to like survive these games. And there was a lot of shootouts. I think we had 7 shootouts in a row at one point in time. We had a lot of these one goal games that we were able to kind of get through that phase of the season. And that was a really critical part for us, because all of the guys that were out of the lineup that may have been new to our team, you know, were able to watch how effectively these kids played the system, and how, where maybe you get somebody with a little bit more scoring ability into that same role, and they're able to play this cohesively as a unit. You know, maybe we can get rewarded with a little bit more offense. And then instead of, you know, a 1-1 tie, maybe it's 3-1 and with an empty net, or 4-1, and we've won the game. And I think that was pretty inspirational for all the guys that were watching. And you know, our farm team being able to play the same system that as us, our you know, the coaching that they did to get these guys ready, they get a big credit for that. And obviously our academy, getting these kids ready to be able to step into our lineup and be able to make a difference with our team. That's what happened. And you know, I think that was a critical point of our season, because we were so new. And when things are so new as a team, you know, there's still that phase of not understanding the way that the full picture looks. And to be able to create the buy-in for our group by having success with a very, very young lineup for so long, that was a really important phase in our season. And then when we got everybody back, or at least most of the guys back, that's when we went streaking. You know, like that was when we went out and we won a lot of games in a row, and we collected points, you know, in it for a big stretch. And then the team confidence, you know, was real high at that point. And you know, but it took some of the adversity to be able to grow through that.
The interesting thing that you mentioned here is players coming up from the Red Bull Hockey Juniors playing or integrating themselves seemingly seamlessly into the system. And we know it from great sports programs all over the world, where, for example, in Barcelona, they teach the exact same system to a 7-year-old and obviously a 27-year-old pro. How does this work with Red Bull? How often do you come together with Helmut Raff, who's leading the academy, or with Hockey Juniors coach Teemu, now that I get his name right, Teemu Leviokki? How often do you sit down and talk about the systems, the specific things that you want to play, that you want to implement?
Yeah, I think for our organization, the one thought is that, you know, probably when they're real young, the system play isn't quite as important as, you know, the individual skill and the game understanding and being able to understand what's your role on the ice, being with or without the puck, you know, on or off the puck. And I think that's where the coaching starts, you know, is that and the big time skill development. And then I think as they get up the ladder, you know, it's definitely into our junior team. We play identical systems. And for me, that just makes the transition so easy for the players, because just imagine this, like imagine being an 18-year-old and imagine getting your first shot, you know, imagine being from Salzburg, you get your first shot, you know, playing for your hometown team, you know, in the professional league, sitting in a dressing room with, you know, guys like Peter Schneider, Thomas Raffel, Dominik Heinrich, like idols in Austrian hockey. And you're sitting in a dressing room with guys that have played in the NHL or been in the American League. And it's like, it's all new and all this stress that's coming. And then you have to learn a new system in that moment. And, you know, I think for the players, that's just not fair. And also for us as coaches, you know, it slows the process down. And so our farm team and with Teemu and Antti have done a phenomenal job of integrating our system and our style of play, which is great now because it's across the board. You know, it's Munich, it's Salzburg, it's Red Bull Juniors. And we're so similar across the board. I think that has really helped the growth of our organization, which was one of the goals of Christian Winkler, you know, really in bringing me here, was to create, you know, one roof. And I think that I think we've accomplished that. And you know, how often do we sit together? Helmut and I usually spend a little bit of time together, you know, at the beginning of the season, kind of going through overview of where guys are. But really our manager, Helmut Schlobo, does a little bit more communicating with him. And we have another coach, Daniel Peterson, that gets, he's taken over a lot of the dialogue between player movement up and down, et cetera. Teemu and I, we're usually in a season-to-season basis, we're usually in pretty close contact. You know, if there's ever questions, we're always here. We spent a lot of time together at the beginning of the season laying things out. And then, you know, through the season, most of the dialogue becomes player movement up and down. And like I said, I've passed that off to one of our assistant coaches, just to allow me to stay a little bit more focused in on our team. But if there's ever a need or questions or thoughts, feedback, you know, I watch a lot of the home games of the farm team, and oftentimes it'll just being around here, we'll start a dialogue, you know, about different things and thoughts. And I'll be honest with you, I've learned from them. I've watched their practices. I've grabbed drills. I've put them into our practice because I thought that they executed them really well. And I think that that exchange, you know, is something that we've tried to create also within the academy. We've had series of presentations, you know, of each academy coach presenting like a coaches conference that for me has been very educational to share for one thing, you know, but also what you get back. And I've gotten better just being around so many great coaches.
Now, one of the iconic statements of these past Ice Hockey League playoffs came from the head coach opposite you on the bench during the finals, Kevin Constantine. He said, "This is the best team," and he talked about Salzburg, "that money can buy." And he didn't mean it in a respectful way, because he added that obviously it's a great team. It's been put together greatly. And he mentioned that obviously free agency, quote unquote, or bringing in imports is kind of a hit and miss game. And everybody hits on a couple of players, and almost every team misses on a couple of players. When did you get the feeling that there was no quote unquote rotten apple in the group that you brought in? Quite to the contrary, that almost all the players that you brought in were indeed hits.
I think it didn't take too long, to be honest with you. In training camp, you could feel it. I'll just go specifically into a player like TJ Brennan. So, TJ was obviously a mega hit. Okay. So, TJ was in an interesting place in his career where, had a phenomenal American League career, kind of got boxed out from COVID somehow, you know, couldn't find the right place in Europe, ended up in Swiss B, fell back in love with hockey, and then was looking for his next opportunity. So he and I connected over the summer, talked about, you know, our vision for our team, you know, and how we can fit in. I knew that he was a great player. Okay. And I've told him this too, so I think he's okay with me sharing. I've told him, you know, that he's accomplished a lot. And I wanted to see him in an environment like this where he's got a chance to win, because he never won. And you know, how he can use his skill set to help a group. I was not shocked by his performance. I watched him play on video. I thought he was one of the best puck moving defensemen I'd ever watched. He's got a phenomenal shot, and he's got a nose for the net, unlike a lot of forwards, truthfully. And the thing that's most impressive to me about TJ is the kind of teammate that he is. He got in with our Austrians immediately. Like they connected with everybody, and his work ethic. He works, he stays on the ice long time after practice. He shows up in the gym. He showed up in tremendous shape. He is a avid worker and embraces our concept of like constantly trying to get better. Like that is TJ. He's still trying to get better. And I think that, you know, you can go through all of our imports, you know, Vinny Laverty, Keegan Kanzig, Ty Loney. You know, I think we only had two import forwards, if I'm not mistaken, you know, the whole season. And, you know, but, you know, Mike Dalhousen at the end, there's probably missing one. And of course our goalies, but they all embrace that same, idea of wanting to be a part of something bigger than themselves and wanting to do the work. They were all very humble. And you know, that was what made the team so successful. You know, if you look at the resumes of the players that came in specifically, like we didn't have a ton of NHL talent, you know, which is probably a little abnormal for Red Bull Salzburg to some extent. You know, but we had good players that had strong character, and they meshed real well together. Like everybody found their spot in the team pretty quickly. And to me, it's our changes were probably to some extent on the import side. But one of the things we wanted to do was strengthen our Austrian core. You know, we felt like we had a group of Austrians that have left, you know, that have been a big impact for Red Bull Salzburg. We'll just name like the Welsers, the Lutuzas, the Trotniks, that group of players. And without being disrespectful to others, there's plenty of others that left, but trying to like a middle-aged Austrian group, you know, that can be around here for a long time, you know, and being able to bring in a guy like Peter Schneider, obviously with an MVP season, but, you know, also with his character, you know, was a huge win and a big job from Helmut Schlögl to be able to get that done. And also guys like Ali Vukovic and Benny Nistner, you know, what incredible roles did they end up playing for us, you know, and being able to strengthen it and build something, you know, that can be around here for a long time. And, you know, I think that we were very, we knew what we wanted when we put the team together. We were very deliberate about it. And, you know, obviously at the end, it feels like it all worked out.
Then again, this team was already great and you kept adding to the greatness by bringing in Mike Dalhuizen, a strong defenseman, and obviously Brian Lebler here, the 300 plus goals that he scored in the past decade. Why did you feel the need that this already great group needed reinforcements?
Lucky Schreier's injury was a big one for D. So without Lucky, we didn't really know when he was going to come back. And, you know, he had a very traumatic injury to his wrist. We felt like we needed to add, replace his minutes, you know, in our decor, you know, and just provide a bit of stability. And that's kind of what we set out to do with Mike. And then, you know, with Brian, I guess the only concern in our group was, you know, if we had injuries or something that comes up in the playoffs, especially with our top end guys, you know, were we going to start to feel a little bit thin, you know, and was there an opportunity to add a guy like Brian, which kind of felt like a no brainer. And it ended up where Ty missed some games. And, you know, I think that it paid off a lot in that moment. You know, Brian was a really easy transition for him and Mike too, like into our team. They're both, they fit the character mold of our team. They fit the work ethic mold of our team. And of course they're both really good hockey players too. So they helped us. There's no question.
Just to state the obvious, I know it's all about the collective. I know it's about the team. And I know that coaches don't want to talk too much about individual efforts, but two individual efforts that just scream at you that we need to talk about. And that's also something that the great people over at Unibet have brought up in their stats. And I want to label the individual efforts first, and then I want to make you kind of rank it. And I know it's two totally different things, but I want to ask you which one's the more impressive one. Jan-Mikael Järvinen playing huge minutes, providing game-winning goals, assists all over the place, recording not a single penalty on the year. The other Finn on the team, Ate Toivonen, 8 games played in the playoffs where you presumably play the best teams the league have to offer. Goal against average of 1.16 and a 95% plus save percentage. Which effort is more impressive to you?
I don't know that I've ever seen anybody go a whole season without a penalty minute. I think Miksa is, he skates a lot. He doesn't reach. You know, he's probably never going to get too involved in like scrums and that physical part where he's going to end up picking up something cheap. But he doesn't reach. He's really, really good about getting his feet moving and working. Pretty impressive. You know, I think that I can go into our goalie situation a little bit. You know, JP, we felt was deserving of starting. And I told that to this too. And a lot of it was because of what he's done for our organization. And, you know, it felt like we had two equal goalies, and it was a bit of a respect move, you know, for JP. You know, we knew they could both get it done, but we started with JP. He actually ended up getting sick between, the first and the second round. And it's where we're fortunate that we can use Ate. And he jumped in there, and my gosh, was he strong from the beginning. He just picked up right from there. Give a big credit to Marcus Kirschbaum, our goalie coach, for keeping him ready to be able to do that. And that was a remarkable effort. I also want to credit team defense in that, you know, and the way that our group played together, because we needed Ate at times, big time. But there was also some games where, you know, we're giving up 18 shots in a game. And so it's not, and there's not too many big ones in there. But I have to say that there were big ones, and he stepped up, you know, and he was really, really impressive. I can just say it without ranking and give you a very cliche coachy answer. Those are both important.
I'll leave it at that. And I second the impression that I think I've never seen a player with as many minutes as Jan-Mikael Järvinen played, not recording a penalty. So this is impressive. And if you want to compare Atte Tolvanen's player statistics to other leagues, and I did it with the National Hockey League, you have to go back to the Stone Age of hockey to find a playoff run of at a minimum 5 games with a lower save percentage and goal against average. And one thing that I have to bring up, stupid me, as I did commentary on Finals Game 4, I never brought up Jan-Mikael Järvinen's impressive no penalties called streak. So give credit where credit is due. Very impressive on Järvinen and very impressive on Tolvanen's end. And the latter was the one who shaped the great saying, bring in a Finn and you'll win. Is it that easy? I mean, he's going to stay. So again, you're going to be the favorites for 22-23.
Oh man, well, he did tell me that on the phone when we were in this recruiting process when JP got injured. I said, well, we already have a Finn, so I don't know. And Ate was he was a really good fit for us. We were a really good fit for him. You know, he was in a place in his career where he needed someone to believe in him. He needed a real opportunity. I think he got it. And then from there, he ran with it, you know, and he was strong the whole season. He unfortunately missed some time at the end with a broken hand, but coordinated really well with JP coming back. And, you know, we had a fantastic tandem, that is one of the best for probably, you know, in the history of this league. That was two strong goalies.
Now, obviously, JP will be on opposite ends next year and the year after as he signed a 2-year contract with Villach. But you got a strong core returning, and the information has already been sent out. Who belongs to that core, what that core is going to be. But then again, there are holes all over the roster, as with every team at this stage of the early plannings for the next season. Backup goaltender is going to be an interesting development with the Red Bulls. There are holes on defense and, of course, on forwards. As we're talking recruiting and as we're talking about looking at those holes, is there anything that you focus on first? Like getting Brennan extended, getting a big time forward, or is it all the positions at the very same time?
Yeah, I think that what you do is you first thing you need to do is you need to have a picture, you know, of where are we and what do we need. And I think that's, you know, as Helmut Schlögl says, you know, he says that this championship run started last May. You know, it started with our exit meetings. You know, it started with creating the picture for what we were going to do moving forward. And he's bang on. You know, it started at the very beginning with creating that picture. And I think that's sort of step one. And we've had some meetings this week in creating that picture. And then from there, I think it's very natural to prioritize. You know, it's like, okay, well, this is the market where there's something very thin, so we have to move fast. This is the one that's going to open up a lot, you know, after the season's end, because then we have a better picture of what the forward market looks like or what the D market looks like, et cetera. Also, you know, prioritizing keeping guys, you know, as far as like, man, these, these guys accomplished something so special this year. It's like, how do you go look to make giant changes? And how many guys can we retain? How quickly can we make that happen? But you always, let's go back to, you know, core principles and philosophy. It's like, how can we get a little better? You know, what can we keep and build on? What can we change and eliminate? You know, how can we learn and improve? And I think that's very natural for us to try to keep doing is to try to keep trying to find an edge and opportunities to get a little bit better. And so that's where we stay curious.
Now, the conclusion of a season always starts with media members developing narratives, creating rumors that they throw out. And rumors, of course, have been following you for quite some time, that you might succeed Don Jackson in Munich, that it might go elsewhere. Obviously, you're going to be with the Red Bulls next year, and I don't want to get into all these rumors too much, but because of the success that you brought to the program, and because of the fact that this success raises a lot of eyebrows, I just want to know, is there a dream job? I mean, you're from Naperville, Illinois. It's on the outskirts of Chicago. If, for example, the Blackhawks were to scout for a new program-changing head coach, and they were to get your number, how long would that phone call take?
No, man. That's always been my joke. It's like, well, the Blackhawks haven't called yet. So that's kind of one of my running gags that I have with a lot of players. But you know what? Like when I set out for coaching, I have a wife and I have two children. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And we really just set out, like my goal in coaching was always to try to find, you know, some element of stability in coaching. And, you know, it turns out I've been with the same organization now, next year's year 10. And, you know, to be able to find stability in coaching is something that doesn't happen all the time. And, you know, that's where I'm so, so grateful for Don, you know, for Renee, for Christian, you know, for Mr. Madison's, for Red Bull, you know, all the people that have afforded me this opportunity to be with such a special place, in such a special organization. So, you know, with that being said, I feel extremely grateful, for being here. What's my dream job? You know, when you sit back and you look at it, you know, do you dream about the NHL? Yeah, I think you do. You know, that would be, it's one of 32 of the best coaches in the world. You know, how do you not dream about that? Do I ever feel like I'm in a rush to get there? Like that's what, I've never felt that, you know, and I'm only 36 years old, but I think this is going into my 11th or 12th year coaching now. And, I can just say that I know I'm in a great place, and I know that I'm still getting better. And I know that I work with great people, you know, and I know that I'm in a wonderful environment, and I don't know that you can ask for a whole lot more than that.
Just a little advice to all the media members that are listening to this. There might be a dream job, but Matt McAvain is not NHL bound. He's Red Bull Salzburg bound for next year. And it is allowed to dream, but you don't have to put everything to paper or create rumors about it. Coach, as we're rounding out this great conversation, I want to revert back to something that you talked about a little earlier, that you read a lot of books and you mentioned Mindset by Carol Dweck that helped you a lot. Now, because of the fact that people, especially nowadays, don't read enough anymore, couple of book recommendations for a long off season.
Yeah. Performance Under Pressure, Kerry Evans. I actually, my assistant coach here, Ben Cooper, he is a big rugby guy. Okay. Loves rugby. His father, I believe, was from South Africa and, you know, was in this rugby culture. Ben follows rugby closely. And obviously when you follow rugby closely, one of the teams that you end up following is the All Blacks in New Zealand. And, they're probably the most successful sports organization in the history of sport. You know, they have a crazy winning percentage. The amount of time they've been number one, you know, is remarkable. I think the lowest they've ever been ranked is number two. It's like, it's an incredible story. And there was a time, I think I might get the year wrong, it might be 2010, where they felt as a team stumped, you know, like, how do we get to the next step? And they were feeling like they were failing under pressure. And not being able to reach the levels that they were expecting to in the big moments. And so what they did was they found this forensic psychologist. His name's Kerry Evans, and he came in and created this, brought this program that he's created into the All Blacks organization. And he has since written a book about it. Coincidentally, I heard about it from Ben. JP Lammer was reading it. I picked it up, and it guided a lot of my talks through the playoffs. It was maybe not the message, but it was in the messaging. And I really, really like that one a lot. Like we mentioned, mindset for me, that's a core principle book that I don't think I'd ever change. Also, Mind Gym. Any player on my team that's struggling, I hand them that book when they're struggling mentally. And I encourage them to read it with a little bit of curiosity, because you won't maybe absorb everything, but maybe there's one or two things that you can grab that can take that can help you create strategies to move forward in your game. And that's why I like that book, because it's got so many different things in it. And I think I'd stop right there. It's three tools that are have been really, really effective for me. And, you know, you can go on and on forever about that, but those three have been most impactful, most recent.
The last one's full title is called Mind Gym, An Athlete's Guide to Inner Excellence. And I want to put out one more recommendation of a book that I've been reading these past couple of days. It's My Wild Hockey Life by Miroslav Fritscher, who died way too early last year. Snorremo head coach, great career, also in North America. So if you want to get your books settled or your book list going as Father's Day and other things are coming up, these would be four recommendations for all the listeners out there. Coach, I know it's not going to be a long off season because there's always hockey happening, and you're already in the thick of recruiting and exit meetings and everything else. So I'm very, very thankful that you took more than an hour of your valued time. So happy about the conversation. So happy that you took the time, and wish you all the best for the off season. Looking forward to seeing you back in September.
Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun to sit and chat together, and I appreciate the kind words and the opportunity to speak.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey.